February 25, 2022. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means finding an excuse to go to the casino when your travel plans change. I was visiting family in the great state of Iowa. A storm was coming through, so rather than risk going to the airport in the morning or heading towards Omaha in the morning, I decided that I would go there the night before to dodge the storm. Ended up being the right decision. And I was like, well, hey, if I'm going to spend some time down here, I might as well get a hotel here in Council Bluffs, Iowa, which is right across the river from Omaha, Nebraska, and it is the home to about three or four casinos, one of them being Ameristar Council Bluffs. That's where I spent a bit of my evening. If you are following me on Twitter, you would have noticed I tweeted out a photo of a tip voucher that the Roll to Win craps table gave me. I thought that was a little interesting. When I went to tip the dealer via the console, it made me choose how much. I chose a dollar, and then it printed, sort of like where the Tito ticket is, it printed a voucher that I then had to hand to the dealer. This was how I tipped my dealer. At the table, it was a little inconvenient and a little weird. I will say, though, and people agreed, and people mentioned this on Twitter when I tweeted it out, and I think they're absolutely right, it would be very convenient if this was an option at actual machines. If I'm playing video poker or playing slots, I would love to print out a tip voucher from the credit that I have in the machine that I can just hand to the waitress who has brought me my cocktail. And I don't have to wonder or worry if I have any chips or have any ones or ask them to break something. That would be super convenient. So hopefully that's not too far away. This was the first time that I ever saw this sort of tip voucher option, even at a Roll to Win. I've been at casinos where there's no tip option at all on the Roll to Win crap Roll to Win table. I've been somewhere where you put it in and it appears on the console for the dealer, and they acknowledge it and it gets sort of digitally transferred that way. First time I've ever had to print a voucher and then hand it to them. Oh well, it was fine. I did very well. It was a very nice night for craps. I was low rolling, so the sort of overall figure wasn't anything to retire over. But I did do about 5x of my buy-in on the Roll to Win craps table. So that was nice. Primarily playing a don't until it's my turn to roll type thing. I think I played the pass line a couple times otherwise, but primarily played the don't until it was my turn to roll, which is essentially how I do don't sessions anymore. Pretty standard 3-point don't, and it worked out. And so I walked away with a nice little multiplier there on my buy-in. Okay, let's get to the interview. This week, I had the pleasure of talking to, by the way, I notice on Twitter when I talk about something being a pleasure, I always show the word absolute in front of it. It was an absolute pleasure, not just a normal pleasure, absolute pleasure. Talking to Jeffrey Benson, who is the sportsbook operations manager at Circa Sports. There's a good chance, especially before Circa was completed, that if you made a bet at the Circa counter over at Golden Gate, you probably saw Jeff hanging out back there. That's where he hung out until Circa, the casino, was built. I wanted to do this episode because I wanted to bring Jeffrey on because I wanted my audience to hear from someone there at Circa about what makes that sports book so unique and why bettors enjoy it so much, why they have so much respect in this industry. This community has rightfully praised Circa for its great casino, but some people aren't quite sure about the prices. Some of the food's good, some of it maybe is overrated, whatever. The thing that Circa has going for it that a lot of us agree is just fantastic and is worthy of the praise that it gets is its sports book. not because it has it's a three-story sports book, not because they have that big old swimming area, swim pool area, but because they operate their book properly and deliver good customer service. And Jeffrey really drives that point home here. So without further ado, Jeffrey Benson of Circa Sports. Jeffrey Benson, sportsbook operations manager at Circa Sports. Sir, I feel like this is long overdue, but welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on. Obviously, follow you guys on Twitter and, got to know what you guys are doing. So certainly big fans and obviously very excited to be joining the podcast today.
Well, Jeff, let's start this interview where we start all these interviews, the rite of passage to the Better Life podcast. What was your first exposure to gambling? How far back can you remember being like first seeing gambling in front of you?
Yeah. For me, obviously I think probably my first exposure, I grew up on the East Coast. That was where I spent my entire childhood life. Went to a small D3 school back on the East Coast, and then ultimately once I graduated, kind of made my way out to what I believe to be one of the greatest cities in America. But certainly up before that, I would say maybe sometime in middle school, you get into some of the March Madness brackets. And things like that and some of those kind of pools. I would say that's probably my first exposure. And then obviously, early in high school, you have your local bookie or your paperhead shop. And I would say that was kind of for me, my first exposure. Obviously very green, don't know necessarily at that age a ton of, what I'm doing or obviously how to quantify my edge. I would say, early, some of those March Madness and football pools kind of, helped me dip my toes in the water. And then obviously having a bookie, and a local through, the high school days and obviously the college days and, playing poker online and things like that. I would say, those are some of my first memories of gambling. And, for me, really my first memory out here, ultimately for my 21st birthday, my dad brought me out to the Mirage. it was just the two of us. It was my spring break. It may have been like conference tournament week or something. But being able to, spend 3 or 4 days out here, right after I had turned 21, and kind of get, the lay of the land and, a little bit of a feel for it. I knew it was where I wanted to be once I graduated college.
So how long does that have you out there then? And not to put your age out there, but I'm curious sort of how long you've been in Vegas now.
Yeah, absolutely. I just turned 33 a little bit before the Super Bowl. Been in the business about 10 years. Been out here since 2012, right after when I graduated.
So what was your journey then from arriving to Vegas to getting in the industry? Like what was your first spot? How'd you find it? Etc.
Yeah, I mean, obviously for me, I think the grandiose idea when I came out here, was to gamble professionally. and obviously being a young, naive, 21-year-old kid who really didn't know much, you kind of quickly get hit in the face and, you're doing things you shouldn't be doing in terms of, gambling and, making, mistakes that, hopefully you don't make at this point in your career. But, for me, I came out here, had a little bit of a small bankroll built up after college, probably gambled for, maybe 6 months, just betting sports. But, for me, it was definitely you learn a lot of lessons. You certainly make a lot of mistakes. But for me, it was a real big grind. And obviously, when you look at, maybe the Vegas Daves of the world and things like that, you get the cars and the girls and the glamour and all this kind of stuff. And, really the kind of, the dirty truth of it is you're really, in front of a screen and watching odds and numbers and running around making bets and things like that. It's not always as glamorous as it would seem. So, for me, I didn't have a lot of, kind of stability and structure and routine. And, at that point, for the first, 5, 6 months or whatever, I didn't get to meet a ton of people out here. So my mom, you know, she said, you know, the best way to probably learn about the industry and, you know, kind of help your gambling, you know, would probably be to get a job in the industry. And, you know, I thought it was a good idea at the time. It would help me to meet some people. So, threw out a couple of applications, you know, surprisingly enough, you know, for a young kid with a college degree, getting a call back at that time, given that I didn't have experience writing tickets, was certainly something that I found, or proved to be more difficult than I thought. But a couple months later, after submitting some applications, I was finally able to get a call from Palace Station, which is part of Station Casinos. And, you know, went down there, interviewed, with a sportsbook manager, and was able to get a job, that way, and started as a ticket writer. And, you know, I'm kind of cocky and brash and 21 and think I kind of know everything about Vegas and get hired. And, you know, I'm excited to sit and, you know, watch sports and get paid to do it. And, right. You know, they plunked me over in the race side and said, you know, you're going to write, you know, $2 Quinellas and, you know, 10 cent supers at Los Alamitos. So that was kind of my first introduction to the industry and, you know, certainly an eye opener.
Yeah. So you said when you came to Vegas, you had this like idea to be, you know, you thought you were going to be this bright eyed gambler to be self-sustaining. Was it solely sports betting that you were considering, or did you dabble in other types of gambling? I know you mentioned poker sort of, sort of pre-Vegas, but did you come to Vegas with the intent of doing anything other than sports?
No, for me, it was always sports. Obviously through college, you know, I didn't make my way to class as much as my parents probably would have liked. you know, during the Poker Stars days and things like that, you know, did a little bit of that stuff, obviously gambling with friends and home games and things like that. But, strictly out here, there was no advantage play, no blackjack, no poker, nothing like that. For me, it was always sports. I've been a big sports fan my whole life. And, you know, for me, I'm a big numbers guy and, you know, being able to kind of put those two things together and, you know, follow my passions was, you know, kind of why I came out, you know, particularly in 2012, you know, before things, in terms of legalization had really taken off.
Yeah. So, which sports did you focus on, primarily? Like, where did you think you had the best edge?
Yeah. I mean, obviously when you're young, you think you can probably beat every sport. you quickly find out that's, you know, certainly not the case. You know, you maybe do well in the fall, you know, betting NFL and college football and then end up dumping it all back, you know, in a summer with baseball. But, you know, for me, now, you know, currently, you know, I'm betting, you know, a decent amount of golf, you know, a lot of futures and props, and definitely playing some NFL, and college football. You know, I don't do a ton of NBA and a ton of, you know, hockey or really any baseball anymore. So, like I said, you know, a lot of futures and props, you know, things, for me that I'm helping to make numbers on. And then obviously, you know, NFL, college football, and then I'm a big golf fan. So I enjoy betting golf as well.
MLB lockout. It's 162 game season. Most people either are into it because they feel like they have an edge or into it because they think they could, but most recreational bettors have a hard time like really staying on top of baseball. They kind of come in and out of it. Do you think the absence of baseball though, especially after the NBA playoffs is over, is going to push bettors into other sports? Or do you think we're going to see just a big lull like we did in 2020 until it's football season again?
I would say probably half and half. You know, Okay. Obviously you'll see somewhat of a lull if we don't have, you know, a full baseball slate. But, you know, by nature, if we don't have baseball, you know, I think that will push people into betting, you know, NASCAR, soccer, golf, things like that. You know, to your point, obviously during the pandemic, you know, when we didn't have baseball, we didn't have the main sports, you know, I think a lot of people had to kind of adjust and adapt. And, you know, myself included, you know, I was, you know, spent quite a bit of time, you know, working on NFL draft props and betting into that market. You know, obviously we were booking like, you know, Cactus Tour golf and, you know, some of these low level things. We obviously did eNASCAR, you know, we were doing some, you know, Counter-Strike and Call of Duty and War of War. It's things like that. So I would say obviously you know, it's I don't think it'll get to that stage. But I think obviously if we don't have a full baseball season and we are in lockout mode, you know, obviously maybe, you know, ourselves and some of these other operators will be able to, you know, certainly expand the menus, you know, put up maybe more NASCAR matchups and props and put up more, you know, golf matchups and props and things like that, to really draw the bettors into some of those sports and, you know, expand our soccer leagues and the offerings in those markets, you know, tennis, things like that, you know, to give us something that we can, you know, generate volume and handle with and, you know, ultimately interest people in terms of booking.
So tell us how you get from stations to Circa.
Yeah. You know, for me, like I said, been in this town 10 years, obviously, you know, with most people, you know, who kind of get to my position or a management position, you know, out here, you know, typically they always start as a ticket writer. You know, some spend more time on the line than others. You know, for me, I wrote tickets for 5 years. I was a supervisor over there for 2 years. But I got to know Matt Metcalf, who's our director here, very well in my time over there. He would come in and bet with us. And we struck up a rapport and a relationship. And, you know, for me, I'm very passionate about our model, and the way we do things and, you know, how we approach customer service, and transparency and the limits we give to our bettors, and not, you know, kicking out winning bettors and things of that nature. So for me, I didn't, you know, see that model, being particularly present in the Vegas landscape. Obviously until, you know, kind of Circa Sports arrived, and obviously, you know, with Derek Stevens, who's our CEO and owner, you know, with his vision combined, you know, with Matt's, you know, leadership and expertise, you know, the opportunity, to kind of, you know, take my talents over here, and maybe work for, you know, a sports book, you know, with a model that, you know, more or less resonates, you know, with what I would want to see as a bettor, was something I was supremely passionate about. So, made the leap over here in, March of 2019, and been over here ever since. And, you know, certainly been, you know, a great change for me. You know, met a lot of great people in the industry, you know, yourself included. And certainly, you know, being able to, you know, be another independent operator, you know, in this market, and, you know, certainly add to the U.S. landscape, has certainly been, you know, a welcome change for us.
How valuable has it been to have bettors behind the counter?
You know, I think it makes all the difference. You know, obviously, you know, when you look at a lot of these corporations, you know, nothing against them, but when you look at the top management and leadership, you know, they're looking at P&Ls, you know, they're financial guys, you know, they may or may not have ever made a bet. And I think it's hard to kind of take that knowledge and understanding and certainly translate it across the counter into what you're doing, you know, with your players. So, you know, obviously having a guy like Derek, you know, somebody who understands variance, who understands, you know, some days you're going to win, some days you're going to lose. You know, he's not reading into what our hold percentage is, and things like that. Just, you know, him having that background, you know, of sports and gambling, you know, and being okay with the model that we're running, you know, has been such a huge component for us. And then when you look at Matt Metcalf, you know, like I said, he's our sportsbook director. You know, I wouldn't work for anyone else in the business. You know, he's a guy who's been on this side of the counter for 10 years, and he's a guy who's been on the other side of the counter for 10 years. You know, he was a professional gambler, kind of cut his teeth on, you know, NFL, you know, college football. You know, he's fantastic with NASCAR, boxing, you know, some of the more niche things, and being able to, you know, understand things, from a company mindset, in terms of the way we want to run a sports book. And then also being able to kind of step foot on the other side of the counter. And when we walk into a sports book, you know, what are the things that we would want to see? You know, that's really what we try to put out on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, for me personally, you know, when I sign up for a sports book, you know, whether I get, you know, a $50, you know, matched opponent, you know, deposit bonus, or, you know, a $100 free bet, you know, for me, those aren't things, that materially make a difference. But when you look at, you know, the money line splits, you know, in baseball and hockey and basketball and football, or you look at, you know, the prop splits, or you look at a future book, And you see that, you know, our Masters pool is, you know, currently, you know, at 17.5%. And you maybe you look around the market and, you know, some of these other books, you know, have 30-35%. You know, for me, you know, that's where, you know, we're really making a difference in terms of, you know, what our product is and ultimately what we can give to the better. So, you know, for us, you know, maybe it's a little bit different of a model than, you know, maybe you see traditionally in the industry. But for us, obviously, like you said, you know, having those bettors, you know, in our management team, and having an owner who's kind of understanding of the model that we want to run, I think it just makes a much, much better user experience, for those people who come into our sports book and, you know, want to bet with us. And ultimately, you know, being on the front line myself and being able to communicate, you know, what Matt and those guys in the risk room are doing, you know, for me, you know, I think, you know, and I strongly believe that it's, you know, gone a long way to differentiating us within the market.
What are, you know, you can just maybe give one example of a challenge that Vegas books have that maybe operators in the other 30 or so states that are legalized? Because I know Vegas is slightly different in what it can and can't book and some of the technology. Not everybody understands that. Can you give an example of maybe why things are different when they roll into Vegas to make a bet?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and it really highlights the differences within the industry. You know, when you look at a market like New Jersey, nobody is really thinking about the brick and mortar retail locations in New Jersey. Everything's online. But when you think about Vegas, you think about the Strip, you think about downtown Las Vegas, you think about the brick and mortar retail locations, you know, in the casinos here, you know, and the sports books here that were built. So, you know, I'd equate, you know, Nevada, and then obviously, you know, the rest of the market in terms of being a retail versus non-retail component. Obviously, we have mobile wagering, but unfortunately, the Gaming Control Board has not approved remote registration. So, you know, when you do touch down, you know, you fly from, say, Florida to Nevada, and, you know, you're here for the week and you want to bet, and you land and you want to sign up for all these apps. You know, it's not as easy as some of these other states because you have to physically go into each of these retail locations and sign up at each of these locations. Whereas, you know, you fly out to New Jersey and you get off the plane, you know, you can sign up for 5, 10, 15 apps, you know, within, you know, 10, 15 minutes. So I would say that's kind of the big difference in terms of that. Obviously, we've built our volume and our handle through our 5 retail books here in the state. And then obviously we operate, you know, 2 states outside of here in Iowa and Colorado. So just kind of juggling what those differences are, you know, what bettors in each state kind of expect, and just continuing to grow our menu. You know, obviously for us, anything we put on the board, we want to be able to take a fair and sizable bet to, you know, whether that's a nickel or $1,000 at the very least, any market we put on the board. So, you know, for us, you know, we may not have as extensive of an in-game or a prop menu as maybe some other books. And obviously the goal in the future for us would be to increase those offerings. But I would say, you know, kind of what I just highlighted would maybe be some of the differences between Nevada or some of the other states that have legalized so far in the country.
So you mentioned Colorado and Iowa, 2 other states that Circa Sports is live. I mean, I don't know how much you can speak to this, but to whatever you can you sort of describe or explain maybe the decision making that goes into, you know, why those 2 states? Will do people in like my state of Virginia have any hopes to see Circa? Like what goes into that sort of expansion?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would say first off, to your home state of Virginia, that's where I grew up for the first, 21 years of my life. I'd be over the moon and thrilled to ultimately bring a Circa Sports location to Virginia. So I would say that's high on the to-do list.
Oh, very good.
But when you think about expansion for us, obviously, you know, the market's hot and very wild right now in a number of different aspects. Obviously, when you look at New York, the tax rates through the roof, you know, when we think of these different jurisdictions and where we want to expand to, ideally, you know, we'd love to be in every state in the United States. you know, but from a business perspective, you know, we have to do things that ultimately make sense for us. So, you know, I would say we're looking at states that have favorable rules and regulations when it comes to remote funding and remote registration. Obviously, you know, getting into some of these states, paying a $20 million market access fee, you know, that doesn't necessarily make sense for us today. But, you know, when you look at certain states, you know, Colorado and Iowa, for example, for us, you know, the ability to get in there on a fair and reasonable deal, and then ultimately, you know, have the players in those states be able to remotely register for our Circa Sports app from anywhere in the state, and then ultimately be able to remotely fund from anywhere in the state. You know, those were the components that we were looking for. Obviously, in both of those states, we don't have brick and mortar locations. So, like I said, as we look to expand, you know, we're targeting states that are similar to both Iowa and Colorado. And, you know, the hope in the future would be to add, you know, say maybe a New Jersey. Obviously, Derek's from Michigan, so Michigan's close to his heart. You know, things like that, just to continue to grow our brand organically over the coming years.
Do you think other sports books, properties, casinos will follow Circa's lead in the way that it operates? Or do you think Circa will sort of always be on its own?
You know, it's a good question. You know, from an operator perspective, you know, I would, I'd certainly hope that, you know, the soft book model that a lot of these operators, you know, are rolling out, I would hope that would continue to be the case, because that will, you know, allow us to continue to differentiate, you know, from a better perspective. Obviously I'm not allowed to bet at Circa Sports, but I would love to see more shops like Circa Sports, that, you know, selfishly will allow, you know, bettors of all ilk, to wager into. Obviously, for those who follow me on social media, I've been, you know, very overt in my feelings for different models within the industry and what I believe is fair and not. You know, that's a conversation, obviously, for another day. But, you know, the hope would be, obviously, you know, as legalization continues to proliferate, you know, that you may see some of these exchange models, or you may see more Circa Sports types, you know, that are catering to both recreational and non-recreational bettors. You know, for us, you know, we try to be a net positive for the industry and certainly add to the ecosystem. And obviously, you know, we're excited to continue our expansion. But, you know, it's, you know, kind of the Circa Sports model, the Pinnacle model, the Chris model, you know, maybe the Sharper Book model. It's, you know, it's a difficult model to run. You know, particularly if you don't have, you know, a Matt Metcalf, a Chris Bennett, a Glenn Herzog, a, you know, a Jeff Davis, those type in the risk room. So, you know, from that perspective, you know, you have to have a lot of experience and know what you're doing in the back room. And, you know, if you have that experience, you know, the goal would, you know, I think from a profitability standpoint, you know, I think, you know, being able to book to both sharp and, you know, recreational players, you know, for us, we believe it's, you know, the model that can be more profitable in the long run.
Yeah. It was probably, it was only a year ago. You and I exchanged a couple of tweets. I asked if Circa by any chance would offer lines for the USL Championship, which is the second tier soccer league here in America. I knew that my chances weren't great. Lo and behold, you admitted that you don't have any plans to book this league, but you went on to explain that some, even the bigger soccer leagues, including like German Bundesliga, write very little tickets. And so it doesn't make sense for you to allocate resources to this market. What does it take for a market to get on Circa's radar for you to be like, okay, I think it's time that we start offering this and start allocating resources to make this available?
Yeah. You know, I think I mentioned earlier, you know, anything that we put on the board, we want to take a fair bet to. You know, I think when you look around the industry, you know, you can have a massive, massive, very expansive prop menu, but you know, if you're only taking $25, $50 a bet on it, you know, for us, you know, that may work for other places. You know, for us, that's not something that interests us. You know, obviously, as we continue to build our team, add more staff, you know, automate things, you know, the goal would be to add more things to our menu. You know, I would say our menu today is, you know, maybe 25% to, you know, one third of what it'll be in, you know, 3 to 5 years. Obviously as we continue to grow, you know, but for us, you know, volume and handle on respective markets, is ultimately what's going to get us, you know, to add other things. And, you know, I think maybe when you look at the EPL, or the UEFA Champions League, and you go back and you look at the ticket count and, you know, kind of, you know, what you wrote on specific games, you know, big games too. And you see kind of a disappointing, right, and a disappointing handle for some of the bigger soccer leagues. You know, for us, then it wouldn't make sense to put, you know, a ton of time and effort into manually booking, you know, say maybe the German Bundesliga, or the La Liga, or some of those things. It's really just dependent upon the rate that we're seeing in current markets. You know, if we see a ton of, you know, ton of golf action, you know, maybe we're going to add, you know, a couple more golf matchups a week, or maybe we're going to add some golf props, things like that. You know, we didn't see a ton of action in the European golf league last year. And we tried to do it through the first couple of weeks this season, but it, you know, it was just, it came to a point where we were, you know, exhausting more hours than it made it worthwhile, because we weren't getting the number of bets that, you know, made sense for us to continue offering it. So really it's just a byproduct of what people are betting. And ultimately the more things people are betting, the more things that people ask for, you know, the goal would be to continue to add those to the menu. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we have a certain amount of resources, that we have to allocate today, and allocating those to, you know, certain major markets, certain in-games and certain props that we know are going to write. That's kind of been our approach up to this point, you know, because we really don't want to put things on the board, where people at the very least can't get a nickel or a dime to.
Yeah. You've been in the industry for about 10 years. What is something about the industry, sports betting specifically, sports books, that maybe surprised you when you first started a decade ago?
Yeah, I mean, obviously when I was, you know, I grew up on the East Coast, you know, didn't kind of understand everything that went on in terms of the gambling world and Las Vegas. And, you know, I think, you know, you hear a lot of things, and then when you get out here and you get behind the counter and you start to see things yourself, you know, your eyes can really get opened up to it. And, you know, obviously I've talked about it quite a bit on social media, but for me, you know, I think the biggest thing, you know, for those who are new to the industry, or maybe not as adept, you know, is the fact that, you know, when you do show an edge, and you are a winning bettor, and you are getting closing line value on your bets, and, you know, you are, you know, lighting up the screen and moving the market, you know, after you make your wagers, you know, that that most places don't react favorably to that. You know, they're quick to cut you down, to lower your limits, or outright, you know, ban you from playing at their sports book. And, you know, obviously that was something I heard, and didn't necessarily believe. And, you know, obviously when you get in the industry, you know, kind of seeing some of that stuff, it's, you know, certainly disappointing from my perspective. Obviously, you know, as somebody who bets and who likes to bet and wants to see it be, you know, a fair, transparent marketplace for all to play in. You know, that's a big part of coming over to Circa Sports, and, you know, a large part of what we do, you know, being able to provide that transparent, you know, marketplace and ecosystem where, you know, you come in, you know what you're able to get, you know, day of NFL Sunday, you know, that on the app or at the counter with zero approval process, you're getting 100,000 on sides. You know, when you're looking at, you know, college football, you know, day of games on Saturday, you know, depending upon the conference, you know, you're getting anywhere between 20,000 and 60,000 down, you know, on the app, or at the counter with no approval process. So for us, you know, I think kind of, you know, a big misnomer is, you know, in gambling, you know, people love, you know, winners, and they, you know, casinos love winners, and, you know, but, you know, that's really not the case. You know, Vegas wasn't built on winners. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of these, you know, shops who maybe don't have, you know, guys who have bet before and understand the business, or have CEO and owners who are receptive to more of a sharp book model, you know, it's a frustrating experience. And, you know, when, when a bigger deal is, you know, figuring out, you know, how to get outs and, you know, how to get your wagers down, rather than, you know, handicapping the game and making numbers and, you know, quantifying what your edge is, you know, that to me is kind of, you know, sad. So being able to see more independent operators, you know, who can provide outlets to these players, you know, more of the sharp ilk, and allow them to get down, and be transparent, and not have an adversarial relationship. You know, I think it's just something that's really resonated, with the betting community. And it's, you know, it's something that really has helped us to differentiate ourselves and our product. And then when you kind of, you know, factor that in with what we're doing from a customer service standpoint, you know, I think it just, it ultimately makes for a better experience for the player. And, you know, as people who have been on the other side of the counter, you know, that's certainly something that we want to see for anybody who steps foot in our sports books.
Yeah. Jeffrey, I have just a couple more questions for you. Tell us about a failure or a perceived failure you've had behind the counter that was a key learning moment for you, where you feel like you made like the strongest bit of growth, whether that's hanging a bad line or something that we don't see behind closed doors, whatever it may be. But an example of where you were like, oh snap, I messed that one up, and it just made you a stronger person behind the counter.
I can't maybe necessarily pinpoint a specific thing, but, you know, for us, you know, obviously this is a, you know, a human generated business. Obviously mistakes are going to happen. You know, for us, we always try to put the customer first. You know, obviously there's going to be times where we enter a line wrong. You know, there's going to be times where we, you know, grade a game wrong. There's going to be times where we underpay a guest, you know, things like that, you know. Like, you know, talking about our customer service, you know, what, you know, if there's an instance where we underpay a guest, you know, actually, I guess I can, it's something that actually happened today. We had a gentleman, he came up to the counter, and he showed, you know, our line supervisor at the time, a couple of, basketball teasers he had made, and the way we had set the basketball teasers up in the system, it had incorrectly graded them. And so we had, in essence, shorted him $257.15, because he had a couple of three team teasers. And one of the legs was a push. And the way the system was set up, it was actually something where, if there was a tie on one of the games, they graded it as a refund, instead of, you know, reducing it to a two teamer. So it was something that was set up wrong on our end. And it was something that, you know, we had done wrong. So, you know, once the guests came up, we investigated it, you know, sincerely apologized to the guests for the issue, you know, manually credited his account with $257.15, you know, gave him a couple drink tickets and, you know, apologized for the hassle and inconvenience. And, you know, for us, you know, I think having been on the other side of the counter, and just kind of putting ourselves in the better shoes, you know, when situations like that arise, you know, just being super empathetic, and really doing everything we can, in those kind of situations, to make right, you know, obviously what we did wrong. You know, I think those kind of things, not making it an adversarial, transaction, and going above and beyond, you know, those are things, that we've realized, you know, can turn a bad situation into a good one, and can turn a customer who's ready to walk out the door into a lifelong customer. So obviously in any business, you know, you're going to make mistakes, and, you know, obviously when humans are involved, you know, things and errors and omissions can happen. And, obviously just, you know, kind of looking those problems, you know, square in the face, and, you know, making sure you do right by your customers, is something that we feel supremely important. So, like I said, you know, have failures, and, you know, things happen every day. And, like I said, you know, just being committed to the, you know, the players here, and making sure that we're giving them the experience we would want, if it was, you know, us stepping foot in the sports book. You know, I think that's something that's passionate for us.
Sure. Jeff, just a final question here. I see you, Matt Metcalf, Derek Stevens, Mike Palm, others over there at Circa and across those properties. interacting with professionals and lead content creators and industry leaders inside of sports betting, while other books and other shops seem to be focusing on their own content without really featuring or collaborating with actual bettors or professionals or industry leaders. Why do you think it's important for a shop like Circuit to be in partnership with individuals like this, or simply to be paying attention to what they're doing?
You know, I think, just having kind of your pulse on the industry and ultimately, the content you put out, for us, obviously having, partnering with influencers and, pick sellers and, touting things and releasing betting splits and all of that kind of stuff. That's, for us, we try to respect the privacy and confidentiality of our bettors. So that's, maybe that's a route that you see, elsewhere in the industry in terms of sharing tickets and things like that. That's not what, what we try to focus on at Circa Sports. We try to use our in-house talent, guys like Matt and Chris Bennett and Jeff Davis and those, and, Glenn and the guys in the back to really channel what we're doing, from a risk perspective. And then obviously, when you look at, Mike Palm and Derek Stevens, those two guys, are the face of, the company. Obviously, they have a great deal of, fans and accolades, and people really like listening to them, talk sports, talk about the industry, talk about what Circa Sports is doing. So for us, obviously being able to speak about our brand and what's important, as opposed to kind of farming that out to influencers and, maybe being kind of like everybody else in the industry, is maybe been a little bit of a different approach for us. But I think for us, what we've seen in terms of how we've been able to grow here in Nevada is, people really resonate with guys like Matt and guys like Derek and guys like Mike. They come down here and they say, is Derek here? And, I'm able to simply point up to, his spot in the sports book or, direct him over to the long bar or the mega bar. And, obviously Mike's doing his VSiN show and, Matt's, running around, or he's in the restroom doing his stuff. So, I think having, tangible figureheads, behind Circa Sports, who can really speak prominently, to what we're doing and, kind of what our value points are, versus some of the other competitors, I think that's certainly something that sets us apart.
Yeah. Jeffrey, this has been a pleasure. I think we packed in a lot here. Thank you so much for coming and hanging out with us. And I thought it was important for my listeners to hear a little bit more about Circa and the way that it operates as a sports book and, the gambling community, the Vegas community sort of talks about Circa as like this new shiny thing downtown. But I think it's important to sort of talk about probably one of the bigger deals in Circa, and that is the sports book and how will you guys operate. So thanks for helping us do that. If people are in Vegas, where can they see you? Are you behind the counter at Golden Gate? Are you at Circa proper? Where are you these days?
Yeah. So we have five retail locations here in Las Vegas, in downtown Las Vegas. We have the D, the Golden Gate, and the Circa. It's the first new resort and casino in downtown Las Vegas in 40 years. We have the world's largest three-story sports book there and the world's largest pool amphitheater up at Stadium Swim. So certainly an attraction-based hotel and casino with a lot of different things. And then we have a couple properties as well off the strip at the Tuscany and the Pass. So I kind of float between all five of them. Certainly spend most of my time here in downtown Las Vegas, but would certainly love to get any of your listeners a drink. And when they come out here, and obviously have them check out Stadium Swim, have them check out the world's largest three-story sports book, and certainly take in a game or two.
Wonderful. Jeff, thank you so much for your time, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Tim.
So, next time you're at Circa Sports, see if Jeffrey's around. See if you can get a drink ticket out of him. Let him know you heard him on The Better Life. Big thanks to Jeffrey for her hanging out with us for a little bit. So let's talk about a meetup in Pittsburgh. A handful of you got at me, said, hey, that sounds fun. I'd be into that. Enough for me to try to put this together. Here are tentative plans, a tentative idea Don't hold me to any of this. May 7th, I believe, is my target date. May 7th. I would like to do sort of a two-day, so probably a Saturday and Sunday. One day hanging out at Rivers, and another day hanging out at Meadows, which is just a little southwest of Pittsburgh. Because I know people like that spot as well. So Rivers inside of Pittsburgh, close to Heinz Field, etc. And then Meadows Casino, I believe it's in Washington, Pennsylvania, if I remember that right. Don't quote me on that, but just outside of Pittsburgh. May 7 is a Saturday. That's the target date to do this. Maybe a spillover into the 8th to do a dual property type deal. See what we can arrange. The idea will be to hang out in the morning and afternoon at the casino. And then for anybody who's interested, go to the Pittsburgh Riverhounds game, which will be just nearby. Highmark Stadium's not far, just nearby. Watch some tiddlywink action, USL style, and then either end the night at the casino again, or see each other in the morning, whatever makes sense. And then spend the second day, if there's interest or it seems feasible, down at Meadows, and see that casino as well. And then that gives people an opportunity, if they can't make one day, maybe they can come hang out the second day. If people want to come in and make it a weekend thing, there's going to be more than just a day of stuff to do. So that's the idea right now. Continue to let me know your interest. If you've even already told me that you're interested and now you've heard the idea, you're like, hey, that sounds like fun, or hey, I have an idea, or maybe, keep talking to me so that way I can keep putting this together and figuring out how it makes the most sense. But yeah, I think a Pittsburgh area meetup is in the works. May 7 is the target date. One of the reasons why May 7 is far enough in the future where I think I can get something together. They play Birmingham that night, which is significant for anybody who follows USL. They ended up not getting to play Birmingham in the playoffs last year because of COVID issues, and so we missed out on what would have been a great match. So I think it'd be fun to see that game, that head-to-head, finally this season. And it's close enough where I feel like it's early. It's before the summer really gets crazy for people. So that is the plan. You probably, you've heard me talk about the better life and what I'm trying to do this year, and then things have not been rolling out the way that I sort of described back in early January. And of course, we've all heard the quote, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face or something like that. That's kind of how I felt this year has happened. For good reasons, the punch in the face has been for fun, exciting new opportunities, and for a very adventurous year ahead. But it was a bit of a punch in the face in that it took the plans right out of me, and I have sort of been struggling to keep things going. Patreon supporters will know that I had to take a week or two off from the side bet action to sort of gather myself. That material starts again this coming Monday, and things will hopefully get back to where I thought it would be now that I've been able to collect myself after kind of a busy, overwhelming few weeks. Better Viewing is in a new feed. You can find it on Apple Podcasts. It is also syndicated in the curating apps such as Pocket Casts, etc. Pending Stitcher and Spotify. I'll update you once it's available there, but you can subscribe to that now on Apple Podcasts and the third-party curating apps, such as, I think, even Google Podcasts is one of them, Pocket Casts, etc. Better Viewing will exclusively be in its own feed. BetterMerch.com is where you can cop some merchandise. Use promo code YO11 for 11% off of your purchase. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife is where you can support the show with a monthly pledge. Thank you for everybody who contributes to this show. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you for keeping this show alive and well, and keeping me motivated and keeping me accountable. And I appreciate that as well. I think that's going to do it for this week's episode, finally catching up on life again. So hopefully the plan, the idea that I sort of was talking about early in the year, I can start getting that to unfold and start getting that in line. On behalf of Jeffrey Benson, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.